I've actually got live from the Falkland Islands, Shannon Cease Marshall. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. A bit bleary-eyed, but here it's daybreak now, so I've got no excuse really. nice to speak to you.
It is very nice to speak to you as well. I'm quite sort of nervous that the link's going to break, whatever. It does sound extremely clear, doesn't it?
It does. It's not bad for 8,000 miles away, is it?
No, it's not too bad. So how the devil are you not in Chertsey and you're in Falklands then? How did you manage to get there? Not literally, but why are you there?
Why am I here? So I am a service wife. Whilst I was the councillor in Chertsey and the Armed Forces Champion, my husband was offered a post here in the Falkland Islands for 2 years. And here I am. There's no real choice when your husband decides to go away, because that's why you married, isn't it? So you can be together. So we're all here together, my husband and the dog and me.
Okay, and the dog, what's the dog's name?
The dog's called Jake.
Oh, Jake, okay.
He's a little Tibetan Spaniel. He's a fawn-coloured, fluffy thing with floppy ears, and he's very furry.
Sounds very cute indeed.
He is.
So what is day-to-day life like in the Falkland Islands?
So day-to-day life, gosh. Well, the potato and onion famine has just stopped, which is wonderful. Okay. We'd completely run out of our onion and potatoes. It's very windy today. It's very early spring, so there's lambs being born. The cruise ships haven't started arriving yet, but the first of the penguins have returned. The king penguins and the Gentoo penguins stay here for a little bit of the winter, but the Magellanics and the rockhoppers disappear. But they all come back about this time of year to reacquaint themselves in their couples along with the albatross. So it's like date night here in the Falklands most of the time at the moment in early spring.
Are the penguins quite friendly to you?
No, penguins are a little bit afraid of humans. If you sit still and a penguin sized, i.e. if you sit down, kneel down, and remain like that for maybe 15, 20 minutes, they'll just carry on and then they'll walk around you and be inquisitive. So I suppose that's pretty friendly for wildlife, isn't it? Because penguins haven't got any natural predators on land. They, they're as friendly as penguins would be. that's not very well described, is it?
Well, I suppose that, they don't have any sort of wildlife and whatever that could attack them. I suppose it's the seals and that sort of thing that could attack them in the sea.
Yeah, so we've got leopard seals down here which eat them, and we've got sea lions that eat them, and we've got orcas that eat them. So, yeah, everything in the sea is bad for a penguin, but on the land they feel pretty safe, okay. Apart from the Johnny Rook or the Karakara, which sometimes eat them.
Okay. Do you think it's a good life being a penguin?
Oh, I don't know. I quite like fish. They don't look too put out to me. I don't know.
So how did you become a councillor for Runnymede? What qualifications do you need? I know you're not a councillor anymore, but...
You don't need any qualifications to be a councillor. You just need to like people. And I think it's right and proper that you don't need a qualification, because the whole idea of councillors is that they're local residents that are representing the people in the ward in which they live. If you started having qualifications, I think that might skew the process a little bit. So no qualification required. You just need to like people, want to listen and want to make a difference. So I'm a big fan of conviction politicians, which is a kind of an old fashioned type politician who'd had a job and worked in the real world, as lots of people say, and then decided that they might have some ideas on how to make policy to make life better for people. The best councillors in my mind are those types of people.
And you really believe that you made a difference when you were councillor?
Yeah, I did. I was responsible. I sat on the vice chair of housing for a bit, and I was responsible for Runnymede, building those first council houses that were built for 25 years, working with the housing officer there at
Wow.
Runnymede Borough Council. We made several different strands of strategy to do some social housing in Runnymede, and one of them was demolishing some garages and building some council houses, which apparently wasn't newsworthy, but I'm pretty sure that everyone out there would like to know that their local council is interested in them.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
yeah, that's what we did. Other things that I did was that I was the first Armed Forces Champion for Runnymede. Armed Forces Champion is something that goes hand in hand with the Armed Forces Covenant, and the covenant is a written promise between the civilian population and the Armed Forces family. It never It's always existed, this idea that service families would be treated in a different way, in a unique way, because of what they've sacrificed to provide service for everybody else, security. This is my first taste of service life, really, following the flag, as the service wives and dependents put it, which is up sticks and moving to another country, maybe for 2 years, new school, new dentist, new doctor, a whole lot of people that you don't know here in the Falkland Islands. Yeah, quite different. But there are people in our communities that do that all the time.
Are you going to be a councillor on the Falkland Islands at all? Do you fancy that role?
Well, funny you should say that. Here in the Falkland Islands, they have their own government, and their own government are comprised of Falkland Island residents who are part of a British Overseas Territories set up. Lots of your listeners, I'm sure, have heard about British Overseas Territories in the last couple of weeks, due to the Caribbean situation. Well, here in the Falklands, it's exactly the same situation here. So actually, I'm not entitled to be a councillor here. I am a British citizen of the UK, but I'm not a British Overseas
Oh,
Territory
okay.
resident,
Yeah, sounds like
which is com something completely different.
Oh, okay. It sounds like a bit of a subtle difference, but if it's completely different, obviously you can't do that.
Well, yeah, it sounds subtle, but it isn't. There's definitely Falkland Islanders, and there's definitely people from the mainland.
Okay,
It's
let's.
definitely There's a definitive line there.
We're talking a little bit about your tools to handle and other things as well, but let's have a track. Now, you chose Elbow one day like this. Why did you choose that?
I absolutely adore this. It reminds me of my daughter Lizzie, and I've left my three children in Surrey. They're not children, they're in their 20s now. But I chose this track particularly because it always reminds me of my daughter Lizzie and her playing her violin, which we listened to on many a morning when she was practicing for various grades of musicianship. So that's why I picked this track. I adore it, it's just wonderful.
Do you keep in regular contact with them at all?
No, I hardly talk to them at all because they're young people,
Yeah.
and the worst thing you could do is talk to your parents. No,
It's
of course
not
they
cool,
send
is
me
it?
text messages and things. Yeah, but it's not. Yeah,
Not cool.
they know I'm thinking about them, and yeah, when they need some money, they'll be in contact.
Yes, right. Okay, let's have a listen to Elbow. Now, that was Elbow One Day Like This for Shannon, who's 8,000 miles away. Hear me okay?
I can still hear you crystal clear.
Good, very good indeed. Now let's go on. Why are you on Twitter quite a lot? You've quite a few followers on Twitter. Why are you on Twitter?
I really don't know. When I was working at Dyslexia Action, there was this guy there called Gary. Hello, Gary, if you're listening. And Gary was raving about Twitter. In fact, he was absolutely bonkers about it. He was going to row all these marathons, and so I thought, oh, I'll have a go at that. I'll have a go at that. And I don't know, it must be, yeah, I've got 1,000 followers now. I feel quite proud of myself.
You do tweet quite a lot, don't you?
I do. I just tweet about stuff that interests me or funny things or campaigns or, you know, just... I often think of Twitter a little bit like going to a cocktail party where...
Never heard it described like that before.
Well, you've got to go and talk to lots of people and, you know, in a cocktail party, you really don't know what everyone's interested in. So it's a way of like homing in on the person that you actually need to have the conversation with at the party, rather than having small talk about something you've got absolutely no clue what anyone's talking about. You know, the person that's keeping chickens over there, yes, I'll go and talk to you. Or whatever it is that's interesting me this week.
I'm just going to have a look at what the weather forecast is for Port Stanley at the moment. It says, you can tell me if this is true or not, it says at 9 o'clock, what time are you at the moment? You're about 8 o'clock, is it, at the moment?
No, we're 7:15.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, apparently at 9 o'clock, it's going to be 6 degrees and cloudy. And then you're going to be having some sunshine around about 12 o'clock with a bit of sunshine. It's still 6 degrees. And it's going to be raining at 3 o'clock in the morning, apparently. And then on Sunday.
It might even snow a bit.
You reckon? Oh, it could do. Yeah, it's quite cold for that. And then tomorrow, you're going to go up to dizzy heights of 11 degrees C during the day. So
yeah, that happens.
Get your suntan lotion on. And then on Monday.
Yeah, well.
do you actually, because I suppose there's quite a bit of snow and maybe it's sort of quite direct sunlight, do you need sun protection?
We need lots of sun protection here because I'm sure you all remember people talking about the hole in the ozone. Well, that's above Antarctica and we're 500 miles away from Antarctica. So we have very, very little ozone to protect ourselves here. And even at 3 degrees, 6 degrees, you go outside on a sunny day and you will get sunburned really quickly. So all of us wear lots of sun protection factor.
And something I didn't really realise at all when that is, but yeah, if the ozone layer's quite thin over Antarctica. So how far are you away from sort of nearest land to anywhere else?
Well, our nearest neighbours, as everybody knows, is Argentina, and they're 300 miles away. Our other neighbour is Chile, and they're just over the border.
All right,
and that's it for neighbours.
Okay.
We don't have any more neighbours. Anybody who wants to go and look at an atlas can see we've got a massive landmass, Antarctica, and then there's nothing all the way around the globe. So if you left Port Stanley and you travelled east and you kept travelling east, you wouldn't hit any landmass until you got to Chile. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. I'm blown away by that, really. So what makes up the Falkland Islands?
So Falkland Islands is made up of two main islands, West Falkland and East Falkland. I often think of them like a pair of hands that where the wrists are held together and the fingers jut out. There's Falkland Sound down the middle and lots of other little islands that are home to penguins and elephant seals and lots of sheep.
Interesting. How many sheep have you got on the island?
How many sheep have we got? Is it like, I'm just talking to Rob here, who's just crawled out of bed. I want to say there's 2 million sheep.
100 per head, so it's 2 million.
Yeah, so for every person, there's 200 sheep.
Wow.
That doesn't sound like enough, actually. Do you think that's about right?
There's obviously a lot of sheep on the island.
There's a lot of sheep.
Yes, yeah,
there certainly is. They have mutton for breakfast, mutton for lunch, and mutton for supper.
Okay, you're not short on mutton then?
We're not short of mutton, no. It's a currency here.
So how are you supplied? You said there was a bit of a shortage, or just coming out of a shortage of potatoes and onions. You get a regular ship coming down there?
Yeah, there's a ship that comes and resupplies the Falkland Islands. The Falkland Islanders also import things from Uruguay, get a lot of Uruguay fruit and veg. We also have a company called Stanley Growers here, which is Jan and Tim Miller. And they grow lots and lots of lovely veggies in a hydroponic tunnel.
Right.
That's down in Stanley, which is quite interesting. And when that's going well, we all have some yummy courgettes. And they've been known to grow strawberries, which are absolutely, you know, just amazing, but we have to wait for summertime for that.
Yeah, okay. So you and Rob have written a book. called Don't Let Your Ego. Yeah, remember that book you've written? Yeah.
I remember.
I actually downloaded that from Amazon the other day, and I read some of it on the train, and it's got me hooked already. It's an absolute bargain, by the way, on Amazon. Tell us a bit about why you wrote the book, and don't give me too many secrets. I haven't finished it yet at the moment, but give me a sort of overview. I've got up to about 30% of the book so far, I have.
Oh, okay. Right. So Don't Let Your Tea Go Cold. Rob and I had been talking about writing a story, and I had a vague idea of a story, and Rob had a vague idea of the story. And in short, it's a book about death letters, which makes it sound absolutely awful, but service people quite often write a letter to be opened in the event of their death. And the book has that kind of line running through it, but it's a story about a soldier who inadvertently has this friendship with this young woman, and you follow this soldier, and you might learn that some soldiers are human after all. They're not all necessarily heroes, they're just regular people. And it's a debut novel by both of us about death letters, and it's quite fun to read. So yeah, I'd like to pigeonhole it in a category, but I don't think it fits in any pigeonhole at the moment.
I haven't got the sort of death letters thing out of it yet at the moment. I can see where you're coming from reading the book, where that letter might come from. But it's not depressing or anything. It's always actually quite a fun book, what I've got so far anyway.
Yeah, it is quite a fun book. And we've had good reviews about it. I'm being ridiculously modest here, it's difficult to know, because every time I read it, I read things in it and think, oh, I wish we'd done it this way. Or it's terrible to talk about your own work like that. Yeah. But yeah, Don't Let Your Tea Go Cold. Apparently Rob's grandmother used to say it, or Nana, as he would call her. And really, it's a saying, nothing's so important that you shouldn't have a cup of tea first and have a think about whatever it is you're going to do. It's a good philosophy, I think.
Should we have another track? You like Green Day.
I do.
And I've got the same album. I've got American Idiot album, I think it is. I've just got the CD here, American Idiot. I don't know this track. He's a rebel, but you like this one. Why do you like this one?
I really like this one. I think it's a little bit of my personality. I'm trying to be a serious politician, but I think underneath all of this, I really am the girl wearing the black eyeliner and thinking to myself, I don't want to conform. I want things to change. That's probably why I am a politician, isn't it? But that's why I like this record. I think it is who I am deep inside, really. And I love a bit of Green Day. It just makes me feel okay.
Presumably you can hear these tracks that I'm playing.
I can. I'm really quite enjoying it.
I'm actually costing you a fortune on the Wi-Fi at the moment. So hopefully...
Yes, you are.
No, I can't send any money for you.
What
I might do...
My pleasure.
What I might do is see if I can send you a CD of the interview, and you get all the music there, and then you can play it as much as you like then. How about that?
Oh, you're a star. That would be amazing. Thank you.
But you probably won't get it for a couple of months, will you, or something? Next time the boat comes down?
No, but... Something to look forward to, isn't it?
Yep. You've got a CD player, haven't you?
We've got a CD player.
Excellent. Right. I'll do that then. Right, here's Green Day. You're listening to the In Bed with Alan Dolby Breakfast Show on Radio Way, an extended version, and I'm talking to Shannon Sais, Marshall, in 8,000 miles away in the Falkland Islands. Are you still there?
I'm still here.
Good. I quite like Green Day as well. I do like Boulevard of Broken Dreams. I think it's quite good.
Yeah, no, that's lovely, isn't it? It's a bit sad, though, I think, maybe, for this time in the morning. That's more you've been in the pub and had a drink and it's the end of the evening kind of song.
Yeah. Right, what were we going to talk about? Oh, yes, you flew back to the UK a little while ago to go to the Black Cherry Fair. And you drove an old car. I think it was Rob that was driving that, I think, if I remember right.
Uh, It wasn't, actually.
Wasn't it? Oh, okay.
No, it was an old boy called Rob, but it wasn't my old boy called Rob.
Okay.
The car that I was in. So I came back for the Black Cherry Fair, and my good friend Gary Webber, who's part of the Chertsey Rotary Club, said, I'm glad you two are back. We need some people to roll their sleeves up and do some work.
All right.
And so Rob rolled his sleeve up and did some work, and I put on a hat and was invited to sit in a car. I don't know quite how I got away with that, but I was very, very pleased to do so. The old car, I don't know where it came from. I think Ray Jones, who runs CJ Smith's in Chertsey, I think it's one of his friends, because he has that yellow Model T Ford that he drives. And then he has another friend that drives a black Model T Ford. And then I think there's a green car that I was in last year, the year I left. And then this year I went in, and I can't even remember what kind of car it was, Alan. Can you remember what kind of car it was? It was a little... Yeah, no, it I can't quite, even remember what car it was.
It was a like sort of 1930s or 40s style, I think it was. Quite a funny thing. I've probably got a photograph somewhere of me trying to interview over the side of the car as it was moving along, and I was in the middle of the street. But
yes, I remember that.
that was quite a good fair. That was that was absolutely packed. It was all day. Very good indeed.
Oh, it was such lovely weather, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And you know, I really don't mind travelling 8,000 miles. It takes me 18 hours to get home, but it was the best thing. It was so exciting to go home and see everybody. And just for fun, I donned this penguin suit. The people of Chertsey and Addlesden might remember seeing our local MP talking to a penguin. Well, that penguin was me. I kind of did it for a bit of fun. And I think Mr. Hammond's security guards were, has the penguin been cleared? Has the penguin been cleared? Who's in the penguin suit? But it was only me.
You are a bit of a rebel, you aren't you?
In a nice way.
So let's go on to talk about finding Sergeant Partridge. There's a link on Vimeo about the story and everything, but it'd be interesting to hear your story as well.
Okay, so when I was I've always known all my life that I have this Indigenous Canadian heritage. I've always known that. And when I was young, it used to be almost like, you know, Shannon, tell us about why you're a North American Indian. And actually, that's all I could really tell, that my grandfather had come over from Canada in World War II, and he had a son with my grandmother. That was my dad. Unfortunately, my grandfather didn't speak English. We assume he died in D-Day because he left in June 1944, and my father died in 1975. So it's always been a big hole. It's always been a bit of a mystery, and several times in my life I've attempted to solve this mystery with no success whatsoever. There are precisely 22 men called Peter Partridge who died in World War II. Uh-huh. And I have no way of telling which one it was, or indeed if he had actually died in World War II, and it turned out that he didn't. I really have the internet to thank for solving it. So I was trying again to find out some information, and I'm kind of rather repeating the video, but I was trying again to find out some information, and I was put onto this charity in Worthing called Canadian Roots, where I met this delightful man called Chris Fowles. Chris Fowles has passed away now, but I'm sure the people of Worthing remember him well. He also was a war baby, I suppose, is the affectionate name for them. Dame Vera Lynn is the patron of our little charity, which are all the Canadian war babies, of which my father was one. Anyway, this lovely chap, Chris Fowles, with a researcher in Canada called Grace Nesbitt, contacted the First Nations Reserve in the Poor Manitoba and said, anybody heard of anyone called Peter Partridge? And they all thought, you know, there was just someone fooling around, pulling their leg. But in short, yes, there was. And I did find him. And I also found that I had an auntie there, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to find an auntie, but it's all in this film. So the film came about because in Canada, British people, well, it's a bit like Who Do You Think You Are, I suppose, that everyone watches that Who Do You Think You Are program. And you can kind of guess where people are going to end up, can't you, at the beginning of the show. I mean, if they're an Asian looking, they're probably going to end up in Asia. They're black, we end up in Africa, or we go to the Caribbean. If they're white, you know, it's pretty straightforward, isn't it? Because everyone kind of, their lineage goes in that particular way. Whereas you look at me and you probably think, oh, I don't really know, But my lineage is back to an indigenous hunter who in 1940 heard that there was a war going on in Europe and he could get some, you know, money. And he joined the Canadian Expeditionary Force, as it was called, because Canada wasn't a country then, and came and lived in Horsham for a bit, i.e. 4 years, while the D-Day plans were prepared. And in that time, he fathered my dad.
Oh, right.
So, yeah, that's Finding Sergeant Partridge. I'll also add that he got shot twice in training, my grandfather, and ended up in Horsham Hospital a couple of times. And that must have been quite remarkable to end up with this Cree chap who only spoke broken English, first language Cree. And there he is in hospital being shot. And he's usually the person doing the shooting, moose or geese or dark or whatever it is that he was shooting up in the Canadian woods. Here in Horsham being shot at by other people. But hey, yeah, it's quite interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. Is the Cree Nation, is that still sort of a sub-part of Canada at all? You know, they've got their own area?
Yeah, they have their own reserve.
Yeah.
So it's called Apaskwayak Cree Nation. They are in the Poor, Manitoba. They have their own reserve land. We have our Indian band number, which is all to do with Queen Victoria. So Queen Victoria recognised Indigenous people. She was quite progressive, actually. So she wrote treaties. I think we're treaty number 5, respecting in the Indigenous way of life and their need for land. And so Apaskwayak Cree Nation are a treaty Indian band recognised by Queen Victoria in northern Canada, subarctic Canada.
And
it's quite far north.
They keep the traditions going as well?
Yeah. So we all went, Rob and my children. We obviously went to make the film. I've been every year, actually. They have Indian days and trappers festivals and, they have powwow and, do all that kind of what you'd expect Indigenous people to be doing. They have schools and suicide awareness bike rides. And they do, what a regular community would do, but with that Indigenous bent on it, it is hard for them. They are quite poor, as a group of people, which I found quite strange, really, because given that they have their own lands, I don't understand why they don't have any money. But they don't have any money by the time they paid for electricity and fuel and so on. I think maybe inflation has left them behind. It's quite interesting to go, I can't rationalize that in my mind at all, the fact that these proud people are put on a reserve, and within the reserve they don't pay any tax, and yet they don't have any real wealth, and they're sometimes treated quite poorly. They're not cherished in the way that Maoris are cherished. I mean, the New Zealand Maoris are treated in a completely different way. Completely different. Even I think Australian Aboriginals, who also have a lot of problems with suicide and drugs and drink, they're getting more respect from the Australian government. But I don't think that's particularly true in Canada, which I think is quite sad. Some sea change needs to happen there, where watching cowboy and Indian films and dressing up as Indians isn't seen as something that's dead. You know, there are Indigenous people out there, and they have got feelings, and being almost treated as a deceased group of people, they're not. They're still here, and they're still amongst us, and they still have their ways. And they demand respect, as we all do. Yeah, that's a bit serious and heavy for this time in the morning.
But it's very interesting, though. Can we just have a little track? So you like the Beatles, and you've selected Something. Any particular reason why you like that?
I as a young woman, I discovered the Beatles, and I own all their albums. And it was really hard to pick any particular track. I chose Something. I love this Abbey Road album. I can just, it almost seems like sacrilege to have to pick one track out of a Beatles album. But I've picked this because it's just beautiful, and it's very romantic, and I like it. It makes me smile.
Okay, we'll play that. This is actually from the Beatles' number one album, and it's obviously a number one. Listen to this. And that was the Beatles in Something. We could hear what you were talking about at the end as well.
Oh, could you? Oh, sorry. We were just talking about the data usage, which is awful, isn't it?
Is it? How much is it used so far?
Oh, no, not very much. Only 65 megabytes.
Okay.
Which a little bit. Yeah, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay.
Don't worry. We get 12,000 megabytes a month for 80 something pounds.
It still sounds quite a lot. It still sounds quite a lot, doesn't
it?
Compared with the UK.
It is from the land of free Wi-Fi. I mean, the UK, every time we go back to the UK, we just think people don't know they're born there. You walk into the shops and all the fruit and veg is there, and you've got free Wi-Fi and tarmac on the roads, and oh my goodness.
Should we start up a campaign to get free Wi-Fi in the Falklands?
Free Wi-Fi in the Falklands would be wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And I'm not just saying that selfishly for myself. When we first arrived here, there was a little cafe here called the Oasis Cafe. And the Oasis Cafe is run by a charity, not for profit, of course. And the idea is that the service people can come in and make cakes, and then the cakes are sold. And so it's like and then the service people come in and buy the cakes and eat the cakes. And anyway, it needed a lot of work. But the other thing about the cafe, apart from the cakes, was everyone came in there to use the Wi-Fi, because it's the natural thing you do, isn't it?
Mm.
And they'd come in, they'd say, oh, what's your Wi-Fi code? And I'd say, there's no free Wi-Fi in the Falkland Islands. And you could see them thinking, how am I going to talk to my family? They're like, the MOD do give them a card, but you know, we're so used to doing everything on the internet. The card lasts maybe half an hour. That's in a week.
Yeah.
So can you imagine just speaking to your family for half an hour in a week? Most of us speak to our family for half an hour, at least, you know, in every half a day, probably. But yeah, we're quite isolated down here. So yeah, free Wi-Fi for the Falklands would be great.
I'll do a campaign there. Do you feel a bit isolated or that far away?
Yeah, we do. We do. We obviously get the television channels. We get BBC One and BBC Two and ITV in real time, in your time, GMT. But we also get them in Falkland Islands time, so we can watch it on delay, if you like.
Yeah, yeah.
So we can watch the news channels, We only have those channels. And then we have our BFBS, which is the British Forces Broadcasting Service. They have a radio station down here. And then we also have Falkland Islands Radio, which is a radio station in Stanley. So big shout out to Falkland Islands Radio. And they broadcast, which is great fun. But yeah, we are quite isolated down here. We can communicate as much as we can. We've got quite into writing letters. Do you remember that? The old snail mail.
I remember
that,
yeah.
But it is so lovely to be able to hold a letter that somebody's written. And it's very exciting. Rob passed me a letter only yesterday. Apparently, I was the only person that got some post because it was internal post. We're waiting for our postal delivery. That should be sorted actually soon, shouldn't it? Yeah, communication is a problem, but it makes you appreciate it so much more.
Do you get many tourists coming down your way?
Yeah, we get lots and lots of tourists. They arrive on cruise ships. I think we get about, 50,000 tourists.
Oh, right.
They come on cruise ships. They've come from Chile or from Argentina, Ushuaia, and they're on their way to Antarctica. So they come on a day trip to Stanley. And, they wander around Stanley High Street. Stanley's a tiny little place. It's only got like 700 people live there.
Mm.
So you can imagine a whole cruise ship, which might be 2,500 people, come and descend on Stanley. And we're all, gosh.
All looking for the Wi-Fi code as well.
Oh, they're all looking for the Wi-Fi code. Yeah, Juliet Bittersweet. It drives her crazy. They come in. No, where's the Wi-Fi code? And she's there going, well, it's a £10 card, madam. But yeah, it's fun when the tourists come. They do ask some funny questions. The American tourists are very funny. Where are the penguins?
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. we're going to play Beach Boys, Wouldn't It Be Nice? Why do you like this one?
Beach Boys.
Yep.
The Beach Boys was my father's favourite band, and I have discovered them probably a bit later on in life, but actually I think they're absolutely wonderful. And this album, Pet Sounds? It is Pet Sounds, isn't it? God, I've got brain freeze now. I'm talking so much. I think it's Pet Sounds. It's a lovely album, and this is a romantic song. So, this is for Rob, really. Though we are older now.
Okay, I've got a burning question, but I'll leave it until after the Beach Boys.
Okay.
Oh, I don't know if you actually heard that at all. I don't know what was going on there. Did you hear that okay?
Well, I only heard the end of it.
Oh, did you? Oh, something obviously went wrong. I am only the chief engineer, and I should know all these sort of things, but obviously there's something dicky going on in the desk there on Channel 3, I think this. We had a little link up on Thursday, and we talked about the state of potholes in Surrey. What are the state of potholes in the Falkland Islands?
I think we reign supreme. We call them roads here in the Falkland Islands, but, you know, it's been very kind to the tracks that have got gravel on them. And when it's blustery or windy, well, it's always blustery and windy, but rains or snows, the stones that they put in the potholes all come back out again. And quite honestly, you have to drive at 10 or 20 miles an hour in your four-wheel drive. We all drive four-wheel drives here in the Falkland Islands, and you bump along the Stanley Road to wherever it is you may be going. Sometimes there isn't gravel. Sometimes it's just mud. And sometimes you're going somewhere and there is no track at all. You just drive towards a mountain, and then they say, oh, drop down by that creek, and that's the way to go. So, yeah, here in the Falkland Islands, there are a lot of potholes, and when it's freezing cold and the water in the pothole has frozen solid, you actually do better than sometimes when the potholes are all full of water and mud. It's horrible.
So we shouldn't really be complaining about our potholes, really, should we? Or we should be driving around in 4x4s like you.
Oh, yeah. But usually it's just one pothole in Surrey, isn't it? It's just like the one in the road that you know it's there.
Well, yeah.
This is going back to the utopia that is Surrey. I mean, Surrey is just so lovely. And I would say to everybody when they go about their business today, they've probably got a little shopping list, or they think they're just going to go out and do some retail stuff, or they want to buy stuff for a birthday party, or they're looking for a present. You know, we just can't do that here. There are no shops here to do that. And yeah, but in Surrey, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And if you have a little dip in a pothole on your way to wherever it is you're going today, you just have a little bit of a think about me, who's 35 miles away from the nearest shop, and that shop just sells tea towels with penguins on it.
But presumably you can get the essentials. You can get milk, bread. I presume that's baked.
We get UHT milk that's been brought from the UK. There's no fresh milk here.
Oh, right.
And Rob is the bread baker. So we can buy frozen bread, you know, like steam baked bread,
Yeah.
but that's been frozen. So it's got that slightly strange texture to it. I don't really enjoy it very much. Or you can make your own, and we make our own.
We are so lucky in Surrey. We can just go on the internet and order all our food and get Sainsbury's to deliver it for us.
Yeah, it's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, we don't have that here. No, I have to. So I don't even write a shopping list, actually. I go to the shops and I see what's in there. So, for instance, there is an abattoir in Stanley, and people will have ordered cuts of meat, and then whatever cuts of meat are left are put on the supermarket shelves. So if you're organised, you can order cuts of meat. Otherwise, you stand at the supermarket shelf and you think, oh, we haven't had mutton for a while. Let's have some lamb shanks or whatever it is that's left on the shelves. Yeah, we I told I've already spoken about the potato and onion shortage, but yeah, it's you go to the shops and whatever is there is what you're gonna have. So you just get very good at pickling eggs or pickling peppers or whatever it is, whatever glut we have of one particular thing, and preserve it. And then maybe next time we have a ship coming in, or maybe we have some fruit and veg delivered to us, you know, we can make a meal out of or whatever it is we've got.
You realise we've been talking for almost an hour now?
Have we really?
It's gone quick, hasn't it?
Gosh,
Gone very quick.
it has. Everyone must be bored of hearing my voice.
I don't think so. It's been very good indeed. Would you like to, well, coming up to about 4 minutes to 12, and we can squeeze in the bare necessities from Jungle Book. How would you like to listen to that? And why?
I'd love to listen to that. So, in the olden days, when people used to send children record tokens and used to go to the record shop and buy a record, I was 8 years old and my grandmother had sent me some record tokens, and I bought the Disney Jungle Book Storyteller record. And the bare necessities is just wonderful, and it goes quite well with my life at the moment. So I hope everyone enjoys it.
Okay, here it is.